Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thursday, thanks for hanging out with us. We're here for you daily, catching up on everything you missed throughout the day. Current events, news, pop culture, our crazy lives, and more. And I am a day away from going to Austin, Texas.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. South By, which is like this huge thing in
Austin,
right?
It's a festival. It's for tech people, entrepreneurs. They have an education festival. They're known for music and film.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the stations here will be probably talking about it because there's a ton of musicians and artists that go there. But I'm part of the interactive for the techies and the social media people and the geeks.
So wait, what exactly are you doing? Can you actually talk about it?
Oh, it's so exclusive.
I don't know. Like, no. You never know. You got contracts and stuff.
I'm hosting a startup panel. So, like, a bunch of startups are going to be showcased there, and I'm going to judge and host it. And then I'm interviewing Zoe Saldana.
Tuesday
on the stage. Yeah.
Hello.
Zoe Saldana?
Yes.
Well, I wanted to kind of go back to you saying you're going to be a judge. What type of judge are you going to be? Are you a Simon, a Paula, or a Randy?
I feel like I'm a Randy.
Really?
You know why? Because I feel like Randy
is
smart.
Love. Is that what he says?
Is that what he does?
Yeah,
I didn't even know that.
He'll be like, dog.
Yeah, I'm totally going to do that.
Yeah, you should be like, what's up, dog?
So I feel like Randy was thoughtful and informed, but like it was nice, but then was real.
See, I feel like I would totally be a
Simon.
I would be
a Simon.
Oh, and I would live while being a Simon Cowell. Like, I honestly, just to see someone like just ripping their dreams apart, literally, that brings me joy.
I feel that. That's why I chose you as my co-host and my best friend.
Aww.
It's a yin and yang. You balance me out, Ryan.
But I'm very excited for you to be chatting with Zoe Saldana. Like, I'm kind of jealous because she's everything.
She's, she's a huge actress. She's been in a ton of big movies.
Oh, I mean, Marvel, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, that's where I feel like I was introduced to her more so, from the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, she's incredible. Like, and she's also was in all the Star Trek movies for all the Trekkies out there.
Yes, she's really done it. And she has an amazing company called Bise, which is for...
Is it Bise or
Bise?
Oh, I thought I always said it Bezos.
Okay.
Bezos.
Hopefully, Bezos, which means kiss. Okay, well, our resident Latina, Vanessa, what does Bise mean? Oh, that's just a word. Bezos means kiss. Okay. Well, this is totally going downhill very quickly. So, you can follow me on Instagram. I'll be in Austin, South by Southwest, all weekend long, bringing you all the action. And I'll be going live from there tomorrow, so the show continues. The show must go on.
Yes, because clearly we need to keep it going.
Yes, or else things might really fall apart.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into what's trending in the news right now. This is breaking. Paul Manafort is being sentenced to 47 months in prison. Judge T.S. Ellis has sentenced Paul Manafort to almost 4 years in prison. President Trump's former campaign chairman will be sentenced today for defrauding banks and the government and failing to pay taxes on millions of dollars in income. And he was convicted by a Virginia jury last August for bank fraud, tax fraud, and other financial crimes related to the money he earned working for Ukrainian politicians. And we're going to be keeping you up with more throughout the show. Breaking news, what's trending in the news, top of the hour, every hour, right here on Let's Go There.
Yeah, I mean, I think the really shocking thing is the fact that he got, like, less than 4 years. He literally only got, like, 2 days.
So Jake Kaplan, who's part of our station and our family, he is the voice of God, as I like to say, actually came in running. We were T-minus five. We were, like, 5 seconds before starting the show. We were going to do another top of the show story, but this broke, and so we had to bring it to everyone. And you came in screaming, did you see what happened to Paul Manafort?
47 months for what he did. I just can't wrap my head around.
First of all, Paul Manafort is like the snake of the snakes. Like, he's the dirtiest out of and that's a lot to say out of this administration.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's like the dirtiest out of all of them.
And like, you can't compete with the history that guy has of being involved with shady crap.
So what do you think it should have been?
Oh,
like 20 years? Life?
20. Yeah. I mean, he changed the Republican platform to favor, I should know better.
Speaker to the mic, sorry.
He changed the whole Republican platform to favor Russia.
Yeah.
You know, took money from shady Russian sources.
He literally
to influence
did whatever
Americans.
He wanted.
I mean, it's just, I'm like, 47 months.
So why so little time?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So ex-federal prosecutor Glenn Kishner reacted to the Manafort sentencing, saying, as a former prosecutor, I'm embarrassed. As an American, I'm upset. I'm just as disappointed with Judge Ellis. It's an outrage and it's disrespectful of the American people. Because it's insane. I think now this is kind of like we're at this point where if all these other kind of indictments, there's about 37 coming out of this investigation, out of these indictments, that kind of means that, if they do get charged, they are charged, but if they do go through this entire process of the trial, it kind of seems like they're not going to get as much time and they're just going to be able to do whatever they want to do. And now it kind of sucks because we're already in this administration where we feel like our president literally does what he wants and there's no consequences.
Well, and I mean, he'll just pardon somebody too if, you know.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, it's like he's above the law.
Well,
you know?
Ellis, the judge did say that the sentence he imposed was more in line with others who had been convicted on similar crimes. So it seems like he's justifying while a lot of people are up in arms like you that think he should have gotten more time. Ellis seems to have given him the time that others get for the similar things.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, this just happens.
I'm still dissecting. Isn't a similar situation, though. This is Paul Manafort, and him dealing with foreign people outside of this country, and then also this administration. Like, this is bigger than just a regular person.
But I don't know if that case is involved.
It's
more about embezzlement and business things. I don't know if it's about the broader campaign. We'll find out.
Well, Manafort says,
dig into it a little deeper.
Yeah, Manafort says he feels humiliated and ashamed, and Ellis noted that he must consider the entirety of Manafort's life when issuing a sentence, noting that Manafort has been, quote, a good friend and a generous person, but that can't erase the criminal activity.
Yeah, that's not a conflict of interest or anything.
Oh my God.
That's really wild. And it honestly, it just kind of shows that this judicial system is very effed up. And clearly no one knows what they're doing, in my opinion.
You know, and I think there's also something, you know, that needs to be discussed is that, you know, there's a lot of liberal people out here in this room and listening.
Of course.
But, you know, it could come out that this is how everybody gets convicted. I mean, maybe they'll get away with it. Just a slap on the wrist, you know? I mean, it's something you have to think about and just consider. And I think this is something that is evidence.
What was that movie about one of the Kennedys who basically killed someone in a car crash and then got away with it?
Yeah, it was the senator.
Yeah.
Senator Kennedy.
Exactly.
He got away with it. I mean,
so like that. Will, looking back at history, will be like, holy mother.
Also, and I kind of want to end on this. Paul Manafort was just obviously sentenced to less than 4 years for committing multiple felonies, while Crystal Mason is serving 5 years for trying to vote in the 2016 election. That was a really big story, but she didn't realize that she was ineligible, and she's also a person.
5 years for that?
She's a black woman as well, so I think there's also one. I'm going back into saying this judicial system is effed up, and clearly we're prioritizing certain people, you know, that aren't people of color.
Jay Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us for that breaking news. More coming up. What's Trending in the News, top of the hour, every hour, as I mentioned before. Now coming up after the break, Queer Eye's Bobby Burke and Meghan McCain are getting into it on Twitter. What he said that triggered her, we'll be diving in. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. You can also listen to us on Alexa. Just say play Channel Q on radio.com. And of course, if you miss any of the episodes of our show, they are up online. We've got a podcast. Just go to wearechannelq.com to listen to full episodes of Let's Go There if you've missed it. Now we're continuing with what's trending in the news. Well, Queer Eye's Bobby Burke got into a heated debate with Meghan McCain over this whole conversation she had on The View about the Green New Deal. Basically, he saw her on The View talking about it, and he called her out because she said a lot of things that just did not make
add up.
Sense.
Fake news.
Yeah, it definitely was. She brought up it as this, you know, of course, the Green New Deal is this progressive legislative package that would reduce carbon emissions and enact a number of big ticket progressive programs like free college tuition, universal health care, universal basic income, and a federal jobs guarantee. It's very much led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who seems to be the face of it, even though there are a lot of other Democrats that are leading the way and who have jumped on board. Well, McCain cited the Conservative American Action Network's estimate that the Green New Deal would cost $93 trillion over 10 years. And economist Noah Smith roughly estimated the cost at $6.6 trillion a year, by the way, with most of it coming from the economic policies, not the environmental policies. She said this, and then we're going to play a clip and you'll hear how it all went down.
Yeah.
She said, when I hear that an average American is going to have to spend $600,000 for a Green New Deal, you can understand how people like me don't think that's logical.
And when she says people like me, she's meaning conservative. She doesn't really care about liberals or anyone else.
And also, because she said, being on The View, this is my job to obviously be this stance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm representing the conservatives. But she wasn't specifying that that was $600,000 over 10 years. And, you know, everything she's saying, the narrative is a common right-wing tactic to make the price of legislation appear in order of magnitude greater than it is. So, you know, they, a lot of times when they debate these things, they act like, oh my God, we're upfronting so much money. It's all come from your pockets. You should be worried, the public, right?
Right.
They're taking from you. They're stealing from you. This doesn't make sense. She also talked about what will get eliminated if the new Green Deal were to take effect.
$51 trillion, the elimination of planes, the elimination of cows, a railway, no planes. I guess nobody can go to Hawaii anymore. It doesn't sound that rational to me.
It isn't rational because those are the things that Donald
Trump
said.
The new Green Deal is not
rational. We are not going to eliminate cars. We are not going to eliminate trains.
Okay, that was them on The View debating that. And she basically said the Green New Deal, literally, that we're not going to have any planes anymore. It'd be like trains and automobiles.
Which was so dramatic. It's also one of those things where even Abby Huntsman on that show, remember when we were talking about when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez brought up the conversation about, oh, because of climate change, people are reconsidering having children. And Abby was like, oh, well, the fact that she even would suggest the end of humanity, the end of human life is just so alarming. Like, are you kidding me? Like, when Drake says going 0 to 100 real quick, Abby Huntsman is at a 65,000.
Yeah.
So is Meghan McCain. It's just kind of like, is that what you're representing when you're talking about conservatives? That you're just going to, you know, twist and turn and make everything more dramatic and elaborate than it actually is?
They're taking it and running with it. And the man that was in the clip is Democratic candidate Jay Inslee, who's like, no, that's, what are you talking about? That's not what I'm saying. So Bobby Burke got into it after seeing this clip saying, today you, Meghan McCain, were everything wrong with journalism, presenting with the fact that you were quoting incorrect data about the Green New Deal. You continue to say it. Why perpetuate the fake news? Then she replied, hey, Bobby, I'm not a journalist. It makes me sad and scared. So many people confuse this. I'm a conservative political commentator. I represent the most conservative point of view in the country, which is my job every day on The View. To which he replied, and these are just so good, so we're going to read them. Blatant lies are not a point of view, honey. They are just a way to rile the base, just like Trump does. I used to have a lot of respect for you and not lump you on the likes of him, but you are literally repeating his lies and are becoming no better. That's when she stepped out of the conversation by saying that she wouldn't be watching Queer Eye anymore. And that was
Here's the thing. And I think my thing about Meghan McCain, the reason why I'm actually very excited that she got dragged to filth by Bobby, because one, shout out to the Queer Eye boys. They are more woke than ever, I feel like. And especially not to say the last Queer Eye guys weren't. It's just, I think we're in a different climate. I think you have to kind of be that, and you have to have, there's so much intersectionality going on, and like being LGBTQ and being a person of color, all these things.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to kind of be aware of a lot of stuff. But I think the one thing thing that I really liked about this was the fact that when Meghan McCain has people on The View, and I'm a huge fan of The View, she normally doesn't give anybody the chance to talk. It's just like she likes to kind of throw her temper tantrum. She likes to be loud. She likes to speak over people. And it's like, that's not how you do it. And so I wonder if he was actually on the show and he would have called her out there, she probably would have lost her mind. I mean, there's been reports about her and Jay Behar getting into it. I mean, she yells at Sonny. She does a lot of these things. And I think someone that actually, you know, gave her that same energy on Twitter, and that the fact that all she could do was like tweet back a gif and of the Brady Bunch, and it's like, Jan or something like that. It's like a Brady Bunch gif. But it's like, it's just so stupid to see her kind of going in like this way and then being very dramatic. Like, how does this help?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I also, I give The View also needs to take responsibility because they're giving her a platform to be a mouthpiece for that.
Yeah.
So, and I think that The View needs every perspective, but it'd be great for them to have a perspective with someone from the other side who's actually going to be bringing up real data and stats instead of propagating narrative that's not
well. I think it's
true.
Just dangerous because she knows she sees herself. She's not a journalist, but I will say Abby does come from being a journalist.
Okay, yeah.
And so she kind of normally brings the facts.
She wasn't there then, though.
I think she was there. She was just quiet as usual, as she should be. No shade.
Okay, well, we got more tea coming up in What's the Tea? Top stories in pop culture and entertainment. So what do you have?
Oh, yes, honey. If you thought the R. Kelly interview couldn't get any worse, honey, grab your tea because his girlfriends are speaking out and we're playing the heated clips coming up in 8 minutes.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. And now we are getting into our top stories in pop culture and entertainment. It's called What's the Tea? So what's the tea, Ryan?
Oh, girl, I'm spilling it all today because, you know, honestly, if y'all thought what we played yesterday during What's the Tea, the R. Kelly interview, if you thought that was bad, y'all might want to buckle in and, like, secure your wigs because it's crazy. And joining us for this crazy conversation is friend of the show, Out Magazine's Director of Culture and Entertainment, Travell Anderson.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, seriously, we have to unpack it all. You know, I hope you're ready.
Let's do it.
All right, let's get started. So 23-year-old Joycelyn Savage and 21-year-old Azriel Clary are defending their relationship with the 52-year-old accused sexual abuser, R. Kelly, in a heated interview. We saw a little clip yesterday of them, but this is kind of the full interview has kind of come out. And then now his girlfriends are speaking up with CBS This Morning. R. Kelly's two girlfriends are accusing their estranged parents of lying about their relationship with the R&B singer for money, with one even claiming that her parents forced her to take sexual videos with him. What is
going on? Why would they want to lie about you, their daughter?
Okay, so when I first met Robert, my parents told me to lie about my age. So when I met him, he thought that I was 18. On top of that, when I was 17, my parents were actually making me, trying to get me to take photos with him, take sexual videos with him, all kinds of stuff.
Wait. Your parents encourage you to do sexual videos with R. Kelly?
Yes.
So, Travell, first of all, I need to know, what was your initial reaction after seeing this interview? And this is to everyone here. Mm-hmm. Do you guys think this helped or hurt R. Kelly's defense? Let's go.
I think it's just my initial thoughts, like seeing the video from yesterday in which he's standing up, he's doing the most in front of Gayle King. I was like, okay, you're acting the way that I think people would assume an abuser would react when confronted with, you know, their abuse. I think the interviews with the two girlfriends, I don't think what they're saying makes little sense to me. In terms of you were 17 and your parents told you to tell them you were 18, because like that aspect of the story just does not seem accurate. And what we know, Gayle King said in an interview or at some point that R. Kelly was like standing behind him off camera, and like he would cough so that they would know that he was in the room, and so. You can't really say that, you know, they have been kind of speaking from their heart about the truth of the situation.
Yeah, and that's what brainwashing is, when you manipulate someone into thinking something is true when it's not. Like at that, when you go through, I'm not
You've never been in a sex cult?
Or sexual abuse or sexual assault to that extreme.
Right.
So I am just speaking from talking about trauma a lot, and we've had experts on.
Yeah.
I would feel like you almost like black out at the scenario, right? Like where you almost put, you could put memories or situations into another place where you can't even retrieve that memory.
Exactly.
And then the person who's the perpetrator can literally create a narrative for you to feed you. And it seems like the reality until you possibly get out of that situation. And that's what it feels like for this. And the fact that he was there, it does not help his case if he wouldn't, like, wasn't letting them be alone in that room.
Which he wasn't even supposed to be there. And I love that you brought up the whole brainwash thing, because actually, you know, Gail actually said that she spoke to with Azriel, that's a name, first of all. Azriel's father, and he actually, you know, said that he felt that his daughter was brainwashed and he was very concerned. But here is her response to those, like, claims. We getting, you know, we love some technical difficulties, honey. Let's play it.
This is the first time hearing, to be honest with you, that your parents are trying to get money from R. Kelly.
Okay.
Because your father told a very different story.
Yeah, he's the manipulative. He's very manipulative, so he's the one you need to watch out for. But my dad and my mom, they started to send threats to both me and him. They said, oh, I'll put all your naked pictures all over the world. I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to ruin him. If he doesn't send $20,000 to this bank account by Monday, oh, I'm going to put everything out there and then $10,000 after that. You're trying to solicit me like I'm some f***ing hoe. I'm not. I'm your child.
All right, I have so many thoughts on this, because what parent would be trying to leak naked pictures of their own child? One, I mean, like, you'd have to be so sociopathic.
Yeah.
Secondly, if she hasn't had any contact with the parent, you would think that this information was coming from, who do you think? R. Kelly.
Which is kind of bringing my next question to you guys. I was thinking about this because, you know, Azriel, she was very defensive. And in that interview, even Joycelyn looked a little bit nervous. And now that we know that R. Kelly was in the room standing behind them and doing all these things, let's be honest here. Do we actually think these girls are brainwashed?
I think what we know is that, like, even from the documentary, right, Surviving R. Kelly, is that there appears to be a history of him bringing these young girls into his circle, making them, giving them the love, giving them the attention, making them feel as if he's going to do something for their career. And only now, years, decades later, are these women, many of them, realizing, right, that they were brainwashed, realizing that they were, you know, held against their will, and they felt like they couldn't leave. And so it's tough to say with that information that that's not happening with these women.
And I totally agree with the same thing. Now, when we get back, I really want to dive into this, because watching this, that interview, especially with the girlfriend, I was like, who around R. Kelly's team is, like, media training them? And should they be even held, like, as accountable as R. Kelly? Because we know people are protecting him. So I want to really dive in with that and your thoughts. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Let's Go There on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q, and we're continuing with the top stories in pop culture and entertainment. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, we're continuing our conversation all about this R. Kelly explosive interview. Yep. And of course, joining us is Out Magazine's Director of Culture and Entertainment, Travell Anderson. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so before obviously we left, I kind of teased that I was thinking about this when I was watching the girlfriends. And of course, I feel like at some point you have to go through media training. You have to answer these things, even though Azriel, she just was very hype and just very negative. She was really angry.
She was on defense.
Yeah, she was very defensive. And so I'm thinking, when do we, and this conversation kind of surrounds, you know, what we've seen with even the Michael Jackson stuff, like the camp around R. Kelly, and should they be held accountable when it comes to, you know, allowing these women to continue to go through this and kind of enabling R. Kelly to feel like he can do what he can do?
Well, I think whoever is around, I think there's an entire around R. Kelly that has allowed him to continue doing what he's been doing, because we've heard of all of this since, you know, he married Aaliyah at 15, I think her actual age was, or something like that, right? So
right.
there's a whole system around R. Kelly that allows these things to happen when it comes to media training. I mean, it's obvious that R. Kelly himself didn't go through media training, right? Because if he did, he wouldn't have had that blow up with right. Gayle King.
Exactly.
Right? And let's be real, he probably can't even afford media training because he wasn't even able to post the bail.
I was about to say that, like, he would not be able to afford it.
Yeah, he literally just went to the Bank of America the first time. He talked about it in the... I'm like, so he never had... That. But here's the thing, in all honesty, and yet Shira kind of felt bad for him, kind of watching in some way, like watching
not
him
bad,
explode.
Like he doesn't deserve it, but like it's just watching a human fall apart like that. It's cringy and it just is it's heartbreaking, even though
he
evil.
He needs therapy.
Yeah, I agree.
He needs some type of help.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things where it's kind of like, it's interesting to me to still see people, especially on social media, still see some people, and a lot of people actually, kind of still saying, he is innocent, I'm standing by him. Why do you especially think that's still going on? And why do you feel like he still kind of has, like, supporters in some way?
Well, I think we've bought into this idea that, like, there are all these systems at play trying to tear a good black man down, right?
Mm.
And like it's one of the same reasons why we had the conversation around Michael Jackson. People just feel like there's a system and there's an orchestration at play to tear the black man down. And we listen to the music and we think it's a bop, we think it's hits, we think it's classics. And so we don't want to undo that because we feel as if we can't listen to the music anymore because of it. And let's also be real, like his victims are black women, and as a society, we don't really care about black women.
Yeah.
I think it's very fascinating to watch this. I am interested to see what happens next. Mm. And I almost feel like there should be a show, like an intervention show for crazy celebrities.
No, it's called jail.
Well, like...
It's called jail,
honey. They can't afford therapy, but we actually are like, let's get this person help, even though we shouldn't want to help him. Like, is there something that can happen, like a nonprofit for crazy people that are in the that are public figures? Because in the end, they're impacting society.
I don't know.
It should be like a public service.
I don't know. It is very interesting when you kind of think about that, because I just hear Dr. Drew's name all over that.
Yeah.
But it also in this whole interview and this whole kind of spectacle that it was, it really reminded me of kind of being this huge like entertainment pop culture moment, kind of like Whitney Houston and Diane Sawyer's, where she's like crack is whack, and I feel like this is going to be kind of something that is going to last in cultural, like just pop culture and forever. Like we're going to see memes of this, SNL, of course. Like, and I wanted to see, like, how do you feel like that's going to impact how we maybe even take pop culture in?
Well, you know, I think that we are at a moment where all of these, like the interview was immediately memed. Like Gayle King released that picture of him going crazy, and I've seen so many memes already. I think it does compromise in a way our ability to seriously grapple with the issue at hand right now, because like when Whitney did, you know, crack is whack or show me the receipts, we didn't have social media. We're only doing that in retrospect. So, like, it's definitely going to change things, but I think, you know, Shira, you're right, like he needs some type of help. He needs some type of therapy, and I think it's important for us to remember that, you know, he is a victim of abuse himself, that in no way excuses his abuse to other people, but, like, it's such a complex issue.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a show, you want to go to the next layer of producing. Don't just get the exclusive interview.
You're trying to get a check. You over here about to produce a whole
saying,
other docuseries.
Like, get him for a week.
Yeah.
Say, we're going to pay for therapy for a week, and we want to see at the beginning and then at the end of it and see what happens. Like, I want to see that.
Yala Van Zandt.
That's exactly. What? Just call her Yala. She'll fix his life. I don't know. But, Travelle, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. Cannot wait to have you back on the show.
Not a problem. Thank you both.
Of course. And if you want to check out any more tea that we have spilled, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and make sure to favorite us on the Radio.com app.
Well, we've got What's Trending in the News, top of the hour in 9 minutes. So keep listening. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and Radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. And here's what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Christina Aguilera is going to be honored by the Human Rights Campaign for LGBTQ advocacy. Yeah, she's done a lot, and she's getting their Ally for Equality Award. The Human Rights Campaign announced Thursday that Aguilera is a true LGBTQ icon who uses her platform, there it is, we love that song, to share a message of hope and inspiration to those who have been marginalized. The group says Aguilera has raised money to fight HIV and AIDS, advocated marriage equality, and spoken out against LGBTQ bullying. The group says Aguilera's 2002 single, Beautiful, is an empowering LGBTQ anthem, and she'll be honored at the group's dinner in Los Angeles on March 30th. That was what's trending in the news. More news, top of the hour, every hour, right here on Let's Go There. And we're listening to Beautiful right now. Yes.
All right.
So let's move on to a discussion we're getting into on Let's Go There today. We've got Jarrett Hill, our pop culture and political journalist. Welcome back.
Hey, that's me.
Yes, it is.
Hi, Jarrett.
So this...
How's it going?
It's like you have a residency here.
Well, you know, I... residency. I want to thank our friends at Park... Park MGM. So excited about the millions of dollars this is bringing in. Sold out crowds.
So this story caught our attention, and it's a pretty big one. Fox News reportedly killed a story about Stormy Daniels before the election. Guess why? To protect Trump. And that's why we wanted to get Jarrett Hill on, because, you know, you are a go-to for the political stories. When you saw this, what did you think?
So this is a part of a bigger story in The New Yorker by Jane Mayer, which is one of the longest articles in creation. It's quite lengthy.
So give us the lowdown.
Really talking about how Fox News has really become state television, which is something that you see in like a lot of communist countries. I mean, if you look at Russia, you'll see it there. North Korea has state TV. And it's no secret that Donald Trump is a big fan of these dictators. And so like... It talks about... What? Can I not say dictator?
No, it was funny. I loved it.
You just like the word dictator, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
That's what you
I'm just there. Laughing because it's, we have a president who's like, who knew we would have a president who looks up to these amazing other world leaders?
I mean, it's amazing is an interesting word there. He's really problematic. And realistically, I think the overarching theme of this conversation in this article is how dangerous something like this is. We've heard multiple times that this is really dangerous for democracy. We've seen, you know, various instances where, you know, the Fox News is informing Donald Trump and Donald Trump is informing Fox News, where we've seen people leave Fox News to go be the highest level people in his administration. We've seen people, you know, do all kinds of things that are really, really troubling in an age where the president relies on one outlet to be his mouthpiece. And that, you know, happens every single day. That's a big problem.
I think the one thing that when I read this, Harry Potter novel. When I read this and like the one thing that was very alarming is the fact that how many people that came from Fox News are now a part of this administration.
Absolutely.
In kind of this way, it's kind of like, oh, if you work at Fox News and you're doing the good work of Donald Trump, he's going to bring you into government issues. And it's just like, where does that even, especially with Sean Hannity, there was several people. And they say that in the White House, they kind of call him the shadow chief of staff. Like, him and President Trump are very, close, and they talk all the time. And it's just very wild.
So,
it's crazy.
Wild and crazy are both the perfect words there, because realistically, Sean Hannity seems to have a conversation with Donald Trump most nights after his show.
That's wild.
Which is... crazy, right? Like,
how many wilds and crazy did we just drive?
Oh my god, did I say that again?
Crazy and wild.
Holy
dictator,
crap.
Dictator, dictator. You guys seem to like that word earlier.
Just take a shot.
Yeah, exactly, right, exactly. What's troubling about it is Sean Hannity presents himself on a network called Fox News, right? But then if you talk to Sean Hannity, he says he's not a journalist. He's a talk show host. But most of the viewers that are watching his show don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Because is he an opinion show? Because I know opinion shows tend to make a lot more money, of course, when it comes to, like, they make 20th Century Fox, a lot of money, like Fox News opinion shows
do. He calls himself a talk show host. And, like, people have come at him and saying, you're a bad journalist because you do X, Y, and Z. And he says, I'm not a journalist.
Don't be on like Fox News and used to not call themselves. They should just say like Fox Heads.
Well, and like Fox Heads.
Where we talk a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really scary because realistically, it's a situation of finding
all kinds of things coming out of the White House going directly to Fox News. It talks here in the beginning of the article about how many times the president has been on, like some 40 plus times that he's been on, but like not on MSNBC at all.
Yeah.
You know, very limited appearances on CNN. And since he's been president, that's been even more disparate. So I think this is one of those moments, and not to be alarming or to use like extremely strong language, but like not anything that's going to require a bleep, but like this is something that is a huge, incredibly huge concern for democracy. If we're going to have a president that has his own mouthpiece that can say whatever he wants it to say or whatever he doesn't want it to say, like can stop these stories like the Stormy Daniels story that you started off with here, this is a major, major problem for the future of this country.
Well, do you think that, you know, it's said too that Sean Hannity actually, and a lot of the talking figureheads over at Fox News, they actually are kind of in charge of policy in some way. Like Donald Trump watches them, and whatever really they say, it kind of goes into policy making in some way. And that's that's been the big conversation.
So I mean, there's only like a slight tinge of hyperbole in that, right?
Yeah.
So like they're not necessarily saying like, well, I mean, that we know of, like write a policy this way, but like the things that they say on television, we normally see end up in, you know, conversation about what's happening in policy, what's happening at the border wall, what's happening, you know, in the military, whatever, what have you. So it's problematic in that way. And like we, during the last shutdown, there was all this conversation about whether or not Ann Coulter was, you know, really like the one that was running it and how she had such a huge impact on, you know, what he was doing and what he wasn't doing, what he would accept and what he wouldn't accept from Congress. So, I mean, it's a very scary thing because realistically, if Donald Trump gets reelected and we have another 4 years of Donald Trump and Fox News,
get your red capes ready.
Listen, things are
going to be handmaid's tale.
Yeah, I mean, like things are going to get worse when he doesn't have to get elected again, right? When he doesn't have to worry about voters.
Oh yeah,
and he can do whatever he wants to do. Yeah,
that is very scary. It's wild. I'm not saying it again. Jared Hill is here. We are talking about how Fox News tried to hide the story about Stormy Daniels in order to not hurt Trump, you know, to get elected. This is what Fox News knew, and this is from an article that Jane Mayer published in The New Yorker. According to Mayer, as the 2016 presidential campaign was in its final stretch, FoxNews.com reporter Diana Falzone had obtained proof about Trump's affair with Daniels and had it confirmed through her manager and former husband. She also had emails between Daniel's lawyer and Michael Cohen about this hush payment, right? And the non-disclosure agreement to keep Daniels from speaking out. The story never came out. That's because former Fox executive Ken LaCorte reportedly told Falzone, because he's her boss at the time. He said, "Good reporting, kiddo, but Rupert wants Donald Trump to win. So just let it go." Of course, referring to Rupert Murdoch, who created Fox News. And then Fox News demoted Falzone in early 2017, and she subsequently sued the network. The two parties reached a settlement, which required Falzone to sign a non-disclosure agreement so she can't speak out, which is also very interesting to see how this all went down. And of course, now we're talking about it now. And what were you about to say?
Yeah, so to that end, like, so the people that are making those decisions at the very highest levels, right? We see those people then go and become communications directors and leading press and all those kinds of things happening within the White House. So it's a really, really scary time to hear things like that and to see like, oh, this is like so overt and blatant and decided.
So is Fox actually controlling policy in the government? We're going to be continuing the conversation on Let's Go There. After this, you're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. Now, with the news coming out that Fox News hid the Stormy Daniels affair with Donald Trump from the public because it could hurt him from being president, this brings up the question, should the media and the news be held accountable for doing something like this? And I also want to bring up a question to you, Jarrett Hill, who's our political journalist, pop culture journalist, joining us in the studio. Should it be illegal for, I would say, not just media, but news specifically to get involved like this? Like, should they be fined, like the FCC fines for swearing and inappropriateness? Why would an outlet not get fined for something like this?
Well, it is an ethical question. So I'm fascinated by the idea of that. I think you'd have to figure out what that language was, because how do you define, like, what's, because this is seemingly like kind of a conspiratorial thing, or dare I say collusion.
Is it though? Because I mean, we've seen that even with the National Enquirer and things like that. Like, there's been all these things where it most definitely has been conflicting with like this administration, and there's really been some sketchy stuff going on.
Yeah, there, I mean, if nothing else, there's like a lot of conflicts of interest, yeah. Right? So like we were talking about in the break, Bill Schein, who was one of the co-presidents at Fox News, who then he had to leave over like some sexual misconduct scandals.
Mm-hmm.
He got paid out millions, I think it was $8 million or something like that.
He sure did, 8.5, I believe.
For his severance, right? But then went to the White House, and he's like still getting paid by Fox News out of that deal, and is on the White House payroll running things. So it's a really, really crazy thing. But he's also like best friends with Sean Hannity, right? And Sean Hannity and the president talk every day, and the president is watching Fox and Friends, and Steve Doocy is like, you know, you careful on the
but
language.
So
there,
with that, yeah, so I think it's fascinating, and I don't know why there isn't some sort of I don't know if it would be not. It couldn't be a nonprofit, but some sort of organization that would look at these things in the news, and you could get fined, or you could be held accountable somehow.
Well, there are definitely organizations that are watching it, monitoring it, and all that. The question is, like, who has the accountability, right? Like, Fox News is able to do whatever they want because they're a private business. They're a privately held company, or I mean, I think they're publicly traded, actually.
But they're
a company, right? They're a corporation. They don't have like a whole bunch of things that they're beholden to, other than like, you can't say these kinds of words. But ethical standards are really something that are determined by each news organization. So CNN says we don't do this.
Yeah.
MSNBC says we don't do that. Fox News says we don't do.
I mean, they do everything. Well, it's very interesting, especially when we're talking about ethical, you know, situations, because I feel like in the conversations recently, especially with, you know, news coming out that Donald Trump actually did know that Jared and Ivanka had this level of security clearance, and
that he gave it to them.
And then we're seeing this where he's adding, you know, people from Fox News into his White House, and it's kind of like, oh, he's just building a yes man team around him.
Yeah.
Now, is obviously there's an ethical situation there, but what does that really look like for a bigger picture, and are there really any legal, you know, implications for that?
You know, as you talk about that, it makes me think about when Donald Trump came back from his first summit with Kim Jong-un. I think it was the most recent one was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in Singapore, I think the first one was. And he came back and he was saying how impressed he was with the team that works around Kim Jong-un. And he's like, when he walks in the room, everyone sits up.
Yeah,
and they respond to him, and they're like, you know.
Yeah, because
like,
they're fearing for their lives.
Yeah, they're going to be murdered.
Exactly. But he said to them, he was like, you know, I wish my people did that, and I want my people to do that kind of thing.
My people.
Right, exactly.
Come on.
And so
happy I'm not his people.
It was like, he wants people to sit up in the room when he comes in and address him, like, in that kind of a way. And like, if Barack Obama had, I don't like when people say, like, if Hillary Clinton had done X, but like, you do think about it. It's like, if Barack Obama had done that, Fox News would have lost their...
For sure. It's very true. I think it's one of those things where we're now seeing that it's just propaganda at this point, and we really can't. And I think that's the clearest thing that I feel like when we're talking about fake news, that is the clearest form of that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we, you know, Donald Trump's, you know, followers and supporters, they see everything else as fake news. And I don't understand that, especially when stories like that come out.
Well, I went to Cuba last year.
Did? Were the pictures cute?
They were really cute.
We need to go.
I would really love to go to Cuba.
I'm Canadian, so I can. Anyway.
Oh, well, look at you. Fancy
Let's move
pants.
On.
Anyway. wild, crazy dictator.
Shot.
But I went to Cuba, and I was really fascinated by, like, they have very, very limited access to the internet, and they have, you know, very limited access to news and information. And I was thinking about Donald Trump had you know, recently become president, and I was thinking to myself about how easy it must be to control a narrative when you have, like, all of this control over what's going out, over what people have access to, and how that impacts what they're thinking. And if you think about between 30 and 40% of this country that has stuck with Donald Trump no matter what, his approval rating has not really moved. His approval rating within the Republican Party has always stayed between 80 and 90%, that are always watching Fox News and getting their information from them. It's very easy to see the impact that Fox News being in his pocket has, and how strong that hold is that they have on that audience.
Well, let's think about it from the other side. Let's say, like, okay, obviously we're coming up on 2020 elections. Mm-hmm. You know, if, you know, I'm, everybody knock on wood at the same time, give me all the sage and the spiritual guidance. Let's hope a Democratic president wins, of course. Mm-hmm. What if that happens the same way, where, let's say, a CNN hops on the bandwagon of just, like, doing in some kind of propaganda? Do you see conservatives kind of saying the same exact thing that we're kind of saying?
Conservatives were saying that about CNN and MSNBC for a long time, right? But, like, the difference is, like, CNN and MSNBC are at least reporting on facts and data, whereas Fox News is reporting on what the president says, right? Like, what the president says happened and those kinds of things, which are never really based in facts and data. When Barack Obama was the president of the United States, he did interviews on every outlet, right? He had, like, it was a harder time with Fox News and it wasn't as often, but, like, he would do interviews there. When's the last time you saw Donald Trump on MSNBC?
That's true.
You know what I mean? And it's been a long time since he was on Fox. So there's always, like, a bias kind of thing that there's a conversation around. But, like, just recently, I believe it was yesterday that it came out, like, the DNC won't be doing any debates with Fox News throughout the process. I think that's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, I would say that gets us into a weird territory, because now it just, then the other side goes, well, you know what, we're going to do the same.
But Republicans didn't do any with MSNBC in the last election either.
But then why should we go to their level?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying, like, we see it happen on both sides.
No, Shane, I kind of need, in my opinion, especially with this 2020 election, I'm not with the Democrats have to kind of be at a higher level. I think we have to kind of, in some way, join the same playing field, because this is going to be a very rough election. And if we go in trying to think about flowers and puppies and butterflies.
But, like, it's not going to help the other side. It's going to fuel their fire.
It's true.
I always say that I think Democrats need people that are as ruthless and relentless as Republicans are.
I agree.
And I mean, we always have this we go high kind of thing, and Democrats like to take the moral high ground and all of that. But there is something to be said for the way that Republicans playing dirty. Like, you can't always return fire. You have to have your levels of ethics, but you also have to be able to fight fire with fire.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
okay. Jared Hill, thank you so much again for being here, our political and pop culture journalist.
Now, wild, crazy dictator.
Shots. I feel like we're in an improv game. Hot and sexy people's pics on Instagram. Did I get your attention? It's so easy to mindlessly look and like those photos. But why? We dive into the psychology behind it all after this. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. We're also on Alexa. Just say play Channel Q on radio.com to listen to us on Alexa. And you can listen to every episode and show of Let's Go There because we're a podcast. That's how it works. Just go to wearechannelq.com to listen to our show if you missed anything today or any other day of the week.
Very true.
So it's time for our Let's Go There topic of the day. We're looking at the psychology behind why we like hot people's pictures on Instagram, which seems simple. I mean, you like things that are good looking, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, right? That are sexy. But there is, you know, some more information behind this. There's psychology behind it. And joining us to share more about that is Francis McAndrew, an evolutionary social psychologist at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having
Frank me. McAndrew. So tell us about this whole idea and concept and why, because you're an expert behind this, why people would be, you know, obsessed with hot, sexy pictures on social media.
Well, I mean, we're judged by the company we keep, right? And that's true even in cyberspace. So our brains are not programmed to live in a world where we see and know strangers like this, people we know nothing about. So if you see somebody often enough and you know a lot about them, whether it's a movie star or somebody on Instagram, it kind of tricks your brain into caring. Mm-hmm. And consciously, you know, these people shouldn't matter. But we can't look away. You know, they're part of our lives. And as you said, what's not to like, right? They're attractive. And so if you like them, who knows? Maybe they'll like you back, right? Maybe a relationship will form. And even if it doesn't,
the facade,
other people will see that you're liking them, and that means you're almost friends, right?
Yeah. It's the facade of social media. And you talk about these, you know, in terms of evolution, we like to form cohesive social groups and then self-identify. Can you speak on that in terms of what that means for social media?
Well, we existed throughout all of our history in tribes where you knew pretty much the same people your whole life, and you had to constantly jockey for position and know who was sleeping with who and who had powerful allies and who didn't. And a lot of that was about positioning yourself socially with the right people. You wanted to know people who knew things. You wanted to be seen with people who were influential. And even though we don't live in those small tribes anymore, I think the social media world has become sort of a new place for us to gather with tribe members. And the same stuff happens. I mean, we're still surfing the internet with caveman brains. So you see good-looking people that other people are liking and they're popular. Gee, I want to be friends with them. And so that's what you do.
We've got, again, Frank McAndrew, who is an evolutionary social psychologist at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, joining us today as we look into the psychology behind why we like what we do like on social media.
So when you're talking about kind of this when we're looking at hot people, we're like, oh, we either really like them or we think about having a relationship with them in some ways. Does that also can that also affect kind of your self-esteem and your confidence, because maybe envy, you know, strikes in because you wish you had a life like theirs?
Well, sure. And that's why, you know, people get depressed when they spend too much time on Facebook, because everybody's putting the good stuff on Facebook, right? And so it looks like everybody else is having a lot more fun than you are. Well, part of the problem with having exposure to all these people who are successful and who look good, it does kind of, you start overestimating your competition, right? These people become part of your everyday life, and compared to them, you're not doing so good. Whereas if you, confined your comparison group to something a little more local, you would probably feel better about yourself.
That's very true, and I don't know if you're familiar with the whole fire festival situation that kind of went up in flames, but that's also kind of how they, you know, promoted this festival with hot women and this the lifestyle, and I think that can be what is very attractive to people, because I guess you think they play on to things that people really want and what they really kind of what they want.
Yeah, and it gives you a way to kind of fake it, right? Even if your life is kind of mundane and people don't really know what you're doing, by kind of associating yourself with these attractive, successful people, and it doesn't just have to be hot-looking people on Instagram, if you're stalking celebrities on Twitter or anything like that, you're sort of in their world, right? And people will see who you're liking and start associating you with them, or at least that's what you're hoping.
Right.
And I don't think most people are sitting down and consciously saying, well, I'm going to like this picture so that people will think this about me. It's an impulse. And
Definitely. It's
there to help us be socially successful.
Well, and real quick, I also think people sometimes like certain people's pictures or even comment on certain people's pictures because they want to be maybe looked at as like maybe they're in the friend group and people them. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's interesting.
Tribalism at its finest.
That's
okay.
So interesting.
More on the psychology behind our addiction to hot pics and being included in social media groups, including, the ones on Instagram. After this, you're listening to Let's Go There with Sheeran Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
On the next Love Line,
we have JC from Big Brother coming by, and also we're going to finish off our week about eating disorder awareness and continue our conversation about how to thrive in a body shaming culture. See you on the next Love Line.
Love Line with Dr. Chris, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, on the new Channel Q. Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q, and we're continuing with our Let's Go There topic of the day, all about the psychology, the reasoning behind why we like sexy people and sexy hot pictures on Instagram.
It's wild.
I'm getting into it.
I mean, I was. You're like, I was like, are you feeling it?
The
right
theatrics.
Now? Yeah.
You know, I'm bringing the theatrics. We've got Frank T. Andrew joining us, an evolutionary social psychologist at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So with all this, you know, liking pictures and this, you're talking about tribalism and how we're bringing it into the social media space. And of course, tribalism goes back to, you know, dates back to us, you know, way back, caveman days or cavewoman days, cave they days. I want to make it gender fluid. You know?
That's right.
What does this now do to our relationship with ourselves and others, this now new type of tribalism that's evolving?
Well, I don't think it's really changed us. I think what it's done is sort of given us a megaphone for gossip and just greatly increased the number of people that we include in that world. But I think the way we respond to people on the internet is exactly the way we responded to people that we knew face-to-face back in the day.
Do you think we'll ever take people? I mean, obviously, we have like this whole Instagram famous world where there's the models and all these people that are making actually incredible livings from, you know, just getting a lot of likes on Instagram, you know, Kim Kardashian. Do you think we're ever going to like really take that seriously? Are we going to always kind of have this kind of, we always look at it, we look down at it?
Well, I'm not so sure we do look down at it. We talk about it like we look down at it, but yet these people are making money, they're popular, we're talking about them on the radio right now. And so in some ways, I think, we're enabling them.
And so I want to go back to, if these are the people, the popular people on Instagram and social media are the famous ones, if you go back to survival of the fittest, they're winning the game, right? So what is that say to everyone else, if they're not winning the game of social media, how are they supposed to feel successful this day and age?
Well, that is tough, because what this does is increase what you perceive the competition to be. Mm-hmm. And so if you spend too much time online and everybody you're looking at looks good and has money and is successful, then what do you got going? Nothing. I wonder if there's a market for, you know, let's create an app out there where you can get online and look at people that can make you feel good about yourself. But we don't do that, right? We're not attracted to that.
But that's so interesting that you're saying that, because I feel like a lot of these platforms started out to create a democracy because traditional media was creating that for us, and this became a way for new people and new talent to bubble up.
Yeah, and it is democracy, so apparently we're getting what we want. I mean, you know, we're the ones that are choosing what gets looked at and what doesn't.
That's true. And so I guess, like, because you study this and you teach it as well, we're talking to Frank McAndrew, an evolutionary social psychologist at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. What are you seeing as your biggest concerns in terms of this model of human behavior?
Well, I'm not an alarmist about this. I've had a lot of people, you know, talk to me about how much time their kids spend on their phones or whatever it might be, as if this is doing something terrible to them. I think the real downside of it is every hour you're spending online is an hour you're not spending doing something else. I don't really think it's the stuff that you're doing online that's the problem, but you're not out in the world meeting real people, you're not getting exercise, you're not doing other things that would make you a little bit more well-rounded. So I don't think that the internet attention in and of itself is terrible. It's what it prevents you from doing that's the problem.
Okay. Well, yeah, a lot to think about there.
Yeah.
And I would say I want to know what it's doing to our brains also, but maybe that's another conversation. Is it making us smarter or dumber long-term in terms of evolution?
It could be making you smarter if you actually get hip on the game and you understand how you can kind of market your own self and what you need it to be.
I'm saying in terms of consumption.
I mean,
what we're consuming daily. Anyway, thank you so much, Frank McAndrew. And of course, you can follow him. Where can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter at FT McAndrew, and I'm also, I've got a webpage, www.frankmcandrew.com.
That's right. So ironic that we asked him where we can find him.
I don't know.
That's right. We're talking about.
You won't find any hot pictures there, I'm afraid.
You never know. You sound hot, Frank.
But, yeah, well,
you know what we'll find? Hot information.
Yeah, that's right. I'll settle for that.
All right. Have a great night. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And coming up, our Q of the Day, our question of the today, and it's going to be looking at manipulation. How do you know you're being manipulated? Let us know. Give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. Now here's what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. A Catholic school is refusing to enroll same-sex couple's child, and that is upsetting other parents. The parents believe the school's position, quote, lacks the compassion and mercy of Christ's message, according to a March 1st letter obtained by The Star. They said, we ask you to consider the many ways that other modern marriages may be inconsistent with the church's teaching on sacramental marriage, mentioning vasectomy, IVF, divorce, and remarriage without approved annulments, the petition said. The signers also noted that the school accepts non-Catholic children whose families are presumably not in marriages that are conformant to the teachings of the church. They said, we respectfully ask you to consider why non-conformity to some of the church's teachings rise to the level of refusing admission to children, while others do not. Surveys indicate that although Catholic Church doctrine has a clear and non-affirming stance towards same-sex marriage, American Catholics are generally more accepting. In 2017, 67% of all U.S. Catholics said they were supportive of same-sex marriage, according to the Pew Research Center. And that was what's trending in the news top of the hour. For more, go to WeAreChannelQ.com. And now we are moving into our cue of the day, our question of the day. What makes a person manipulative? Where do you think this was inspired from?
I don't know. Are we talking about someone?
R. Kelly. We're talking about R. Kelly and that crazy explosive interview that has been everywhere this week. And the what seems like obvious manipulation he has over these two women that are still his girlfriends that were also being interviewed by Gayle King. So according to, I guess this is what psychological manipulation is defined as.
Oh, okay.
All right. As the exercise of undue influence through mental distortion and emotional exploitation with the intention to seize power, control, benefits, and privileges at the victim's expense. So, of course, we're asking you what makes a person manipulative and have you been in a manipulative relationship? Give us a call, 833-77-CULL-Q, 833-772-2557 to answer our question right now. Have you been in a relationship that was manipulative? Well, first, what do you think makes something manipulative? And then I want to know.
Okay, so one, something that I think a person... it makes a person manipulative is someone that maybe wants control, or someone that is willing, or maybe even sometimes jealousy can be something that makes them manipulative, where they're trying to always kind of control the narrative. I think control is a main like thing for a manipulative person, because they want to be able to like have you do what they want you to do.
Yeah.
But I also think it can, even when it comes to, I feel like in my experience of ever dealing with someone that was manipulative, it's also kind of like lying as well. Like lying can be a sign of being a person being manipulative, that they have like
pathological liar.
Yeah, they're just always lying, even if when it's like very small, minute things.
Yeah.
That's just like when you think about it, it's like, why would you lie about that? And did you just want me to think this way? And did you just want me to think that you had this perfect lifestyle in some way? Have I ever been in a manipulative relationship? It depends on how you look at it. I think when it comes to like being cheated on and things like that, I think there's a sense of manipulation there. But also I was kind of with a person as well that kind of lied a lot as well. Not even just about cheating, but other things in just life, when it was just like, when you think about it, it's just like, why? Like, why would you lie about that? This is not something that you could have just easily said this and we could have moved past it. But it's because it's a sense of control. It's a sense of them wanting you to perceive them a certain way is what can be very interesting when it comes to manipulation.
Yeah, and I think it's very synonymous with being in a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
Not just something that's involving intimacy or being sexual, but even a friendship that is toxic or manipulative, where they're always, from my experience, one of my relationships that I was in, I would say it was pretty toxic, because we were always fighting, and he would make me feel, specifically with work, that I was better off with him than without him. So he, you know, this is a person I started my company with. He got me to a new level. He would always tell me what to wear and how to dress and how to act in meetings. Oh. And if I didn't do that...
So he was like your Kanye West, your Kim Kardashian? Because honestly, I feel that that's the same thing. I feel like
back
Kanye
in the day,
can be
I used
very
to say
manipulative.
That, I used to say the Tina Turner reference.
Oh, like he was your Ike to your Tina.
But I think,
he wasn't abusive.
No,
like,
he wasn't.
Physically.
But we would have a meeting, and if I said something, or, you know, I would be hippy-dippy Shira, where I kind of, you know, I get passionate and I'm trying to be funny. How I am.
No, I know you.
He would, if it wasn't like in the strategy of the meeting, getting to a point or focus, he would kick me under the table.
Okay, so, but do you think do you think it was one of those things where it kind of started as him maybe trying to help, like, you learn what the business aspects of a lot of things, and it just kind of ended up being like, oh, dude, now you're just being a lie. You're not letting me be me. You're trying to, like, you know, who I am.
As the business part started to get, you know, become more and more, and we became successful, you know, any decision I would make, or he'd just be like, yeah, you don't know, that's not your world. You don't know, like, I'll handle it. Then it made me feel like I lacked confidence in those spaces. And then when I wanted to end things, he said, well, you're not going to be able to do what you do without me. And then I'm going to tell the board, I'm going to do this, do that. So I felt a bit, now I take responsibility for being it. I don't like to be a victim in my life, but I did feel somewhat not manipulated.
Wait, what do you mean you take responsibility for being in it?
Because I was an adult and I chose to be in it, but I was fearful at the time. I lacked confidence. I was scared what would happen if I said, you know what? Yeah, leave. I could handle this myself, because I didn't feel like I could, because he made me feel right. I felt that way. Like I couldn't do what I was doing without him.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually can relate to that. I think when you feel, especially when you're in a relationship with someone, and then maybe when you break up, it kind of seems like, okay, so what do I do when I'm just by myself? Like, who am I just by myself doing these things, trying to be successful? Can I do it? And it kind of like you pick the safe area where you're like staying in it. And even if he's being manipulative like that, that's even fueling that thought process.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to get into how to spot and stop manipulators after the break. Our cue of the day again is what makes a person manipulative. Give us a call, 833-77-CALL-CUE. You're listening to Let's Go There on the new channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
Person manipulative, and have you been in a manipulative relationship? We want to hear from you. Now, there's a lot of people that are responding on social media. So what are people saying, Ryan?
Yeah, John said, that's a word. Manipulative people. That's such a tongue twister word. Anyway, people do not recognize the boundaries of others and don't care who gets hurt in the pursuit. That's interesting. People are also saying, I think you just described Trump. I think her name is Gabriel. Says when it doesn't hurt, when it doesn't matter what it takes a person to get their way. Lies, omission, half truths, half lies, one sided stories, deceptions, blatant fiction, blatant acting, blame shifting, betrayals, line crossings. All of it is manipulation.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like in terms of a relationship with my significant other, I've never been in a truly manipulative where it was to that extent. Besides maybe those casual relationship booty calls, where I'm like, there are lies here. But I do feel like in the workplace, I've been in manipulative situations, specifically the previous one, and you know what I'm talking about, where there was a new boss that came in and he wanted me out. And he was trying to manipulate the situation, so I felt bad about myself.
Yeah.
I felt there were lies. He cut me off, just, you know, like this, the manipulative situation we see, you know, with R. Kelly, not to that extreme, but, you know, that they cut you off from connecting with other people so you can get some clarity. So he was cutting me off from everyone else, saying, oh, don't reach out to them. I already talked to them. They don't have any answers for you. And that felt like very manipulative.
You know, that's a lot of times when we talk about, even, you know, not even in relationships, I think sometimes we can see that stuff in workrooms.
And
because people are competing with each other and they tend to, you know, you never know if you're kind of like the more quiet person, and then there's the person that is really trying to get to the next level, that
Slaying
is willing to do whatever they need to do to get there. And there's, and sometimes you can see that. And even that same person was, when I, you know, decided to leave, it was one of those things where it was like, oh, well, we would love to kind of keep you around. Like, if you have any connections or like any, your influencer connections are, you know, we would love to, you know, for you to work with the new person that's here that was going to be like my new manager. It was like a whole thing. It was very manipulative when you think about it from that picture, but that's a lot of times, unfortunately, when you deal with corporate settings, that's what it can be.
And then also when you constantly, you have, your boundaries are here and they're constantly pushing it, right?
Right,
and then
right.
You just have to be aware when you're in those situations. And once again, it doesn't just pop up in terms of a intimate or sexual relationship. It could be in a friendship, in the workplace.
Yeah.
Just take note if a dynamic is making you feel less than, right?
I totally agree.
You're feeling like you're being lied to, like the goalpost is always moving, your boundaries are always moving, and that is a toxic dynamic, a manipulative dynamic.
Yeah, Lizzie actually on Twitter says, they basically don't care about anyone else but themselves, throw everything out because they can't get what they want.
So we want to get into this quickly from psychologytoday.com, how to spot and stop manipulators. Okay, most manipulative individuals have four common characteristics. They know how to detect your weaknesses. And specifically, I find I've been in that place because I am gullible and I'm very vulnerable.
No, I don't think you're, I mean, I don't think you're gullible. That's well, a, I don't think, I wouldn't
maybe
say.
Maybe I'm putting myself in a powerless situation.
Yeah, don't, you're right. Don't,
sorry.
Don't frame yourself.
Calling myself out.
You have slayed this industry for a very long time. You are most definitely nowhere near powerless.
Thank you.
Get
moving on. Two, once found, they use your weaknesses against you. Through their shrewd machinations, they convince you to give up something of yourself in order to serve their self-centered interests. And then four, in work, social, and family situations, once a manipulator succeeds in taking advantage of you, he or she will likely repeat the violation until you put a stop to the exploitation. And it goes back to, we talked about it with Michael Jackson, the where he gets you ready, primed. What's
yeah, he like groomed you.
Grooms
yes.
you.
Oh, someone also actually said, going back to social media, and this actually kind of was like, ding, ding, ding. Someone who is always right by spinning the facts to make you the one in fault.
Yes.
One whose drive in life is to get what they want no matter who affects it. And that's also the thing that even when a person kind of like constantly like cheats or lies to you in like a relationship where they're always making you feel like you're the crazy person.
Yes.
Honey, I will show you crazy.
Right? What makes a person manipulative, and have you been in that type of relationship? Share your stories. Give us a call. I'm saying that so jolly. Like, you've been manipulated? Give us a call.
Good times.
833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We've got Dr. Chris Donahue from Loveline here. Of course, Loveline is after our show, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific. That's 10 to midnight Eastern.
So you guys are basically a good appetizer. And then I show up
yes,
for dinner.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you know, some people get full on appetizers, so.
Sure do.
Just saying.
That's what I do. That's why I don't have them.
So.
What are you guys talking about?
Manipulation.
Yeah.
How can you spot a manipulator? How do you know if you're in a relationship that's involving manipulation?
Well, so in a broader sense, what you're talking about is what we call emotional abuse.
Okay.
Because manipulation would fall under the umbrella of psychologically abusing someone.
Hmm. All right, so what does that mean? Like, how can you spot if you're in that?
Okay, I'll put it in the most common terms that we have today. Number one, someone trying to control your social life. Mm. So if you're dating someone and they're saying who you can see and who you can't see and how late you can go out, if you're dating someone who always is checking in on you while you're out with your friends, that's emotional abuse and control manipulation, right? Also, someone who goes through your phone or demands access to your phone or your social media, that's a form of control, manipulation, and psychological abuse.
What if you do it and you're like all cute about it? Like, oh, can I have your phone?
Well, that all of a sudden makes it all better. As long as you're cute about something.
Hey, where are you at right now,
the psychological
now,
impact no longer matters. No, it's absolutely a problem. And I keep using that word because people, I think there's some things that have become normative because of our phones and social media, and we don't have solid boundaries. And so a healthy person sets those boundaries and says, just because you're my boyfriend or girlfriend, and just because we might be monogamous or exclusive or even married, you don't have a right to have access to every part of my life. You still don't. I still get to have privacy.
Although it does make me feel this emotionally safe when I know I have access.
And that's a false sense of safety.
That's yeah, a false I agree sense with that. Safety. I agree with that.
Thank you.
I agree with that. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
I think when you feel like, okay, if it's not like you're going to look for something, yeah. but if it's just like, oh, if something, you know, if you just want to pop up or something, or just being like, even if it's not even looking, wanting to go through his stuff, it's just being like, oh.
That you have the password.
Yeah, it's just the password, but also like, oh, if you want to look at something on the calendar or something, you want to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's one of those things where he feels comfortable, or that person feels comfortable
well,
to be like,
this.
Yeah, here.
Having done this for 2 decades, the funny thing is those measures that people take have never ever prevented someone from cheating if they wanted to.
Of course.
Yeah, so, of course. Yeah.
So so that's why it really becomes just abusive and a control manipulation tactic. So I call that out so that people can hear that and maybe stop doing that. Because if you care about someone, you shouldn't want to do that to them. And also,
but what if it's more your own? Like, I acknowledge that it's more my own issue.
Which part?
Like if
you
I
do that
want,
to your partners?
No, I.
Oh,
my God.
Drag.
No, I. But,
stop doing
no,
that.
I, my current partner, I acknowledged coming out of something where I was crappy, and so I kind of then projected that onto him, like he was gonna be crappy to me, and so then I was kind of going through something where I was like, if I text you, like I feel like I want. And he also was abusing alcohol. Anyway, this okay. is so. If I knew he was going out and getting blackout drunk, it would make me feel uncomfortable because I connected that to me doing that and hooking up with someone else.
Right.
So we had to create those set boundaries and also set an understanding of where we were both coming from.
Yes, you both had work to do.
We still do. Okay.
Still do.
Did you see this R. Kelly interview? The final stuff that came out.
Did not. I'm not that interested in watching it.
Well, interesting, considering you're a doctor. Don't you want to see what's going on out there?
I know. I'd see it in my office every day.
I am.
I'm not interested in his life specifically because he's a celebrity. I deal with it on the ground with other people's lives. His isn't more interesting to me.
So yeah. you have people that have been a perpetrator like him who are...
Yeah.
You're... Really?
I've worked with sex offenders. Yeah.
All right. This is interesting.
Wait, how is that?
Yeah.
Did you feel like... I guess some people would have like a kind of like an ethical, like a maybe like a moral compass of themselves, being like, yeah. I don't want to work with those type of people. So
most people shouldn't work with them, yeah. and most people aren't cut out for it. And the reason why I am able to is because I have this amazing capacity to just develop empathy for everyone that's struggling. And mm-hmm. people that hurt people are struggling, and they need help as well. In fact, those people that hurt people the most need the most help. And punishing them doesn't help transform anything. And so they enter my office because, you know, you have to understand, the ones that come to see me, they come to see me generally because they're healthy enough to know that they have impulses, but they don't want to act out on them. And so the work is about impulse, boundaries, developing empathy. But then I have worked with people that are court mandated, and that's quite difficult because they're not necessarily there because they want transformation. It's to stay out of the justice system.
I said this earlier in the show that there should be some sort of therapy session done with R. Kelly, or a week of therapy.
100%. Just putting this man in jail just punishes it. It doesn't actually heal or transform, and it's not actually justice-based. It's punishment-based. No one's actually helped.
True. I think what comes to my mind is, how are we ever supposed to trust that he's actually going to take, you know, responsibility or accountability for what his actions have done? And so it's kind of like putting him into that kind of like the people that maybe be court ordered.
Yeah.
They're just sitting there, and it's only if he's willing to do it and actually not be in denial of like what he's, you know,
it's
done.
A good question, because what happens is people serve their prison sentence and then they get let out, and prison isn't rehabilitative. Mm. And so our system inherently does put them back out on the street, having not attempted to help them. And that's scarier to me than some attempts at therapy.
Wow. A lot to go there with,
yes.
you know? So what's coming up on Loveline?
Oh, we have JC from Big Brother, and we're going to be finishing off the topic around, you know, it's National Eating Disorders Awareness Week, so signs of hidden and covert eating disorder, but it's also going to be fun, so we're going to have some fun stuff, too.
Great. Well, Dr. Chris, as
thank
always,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
We love having you in the studio as we wrap things up. It brings an energy to the room.
It does, and we always need more experts
exactly.
to tell us we're wrong.
But true. All right, so we got our Yaz Queen of the Day coming up. Let me tell you, this one involves Mr. Rogers. Is it finally, a fact that he's bisexual? The quote that has everyone talking. After this, you're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. And guess what? We've got a podcast. You can listen to full episodes of Let's Go There. If you missed anything during the week, just go to wearechannelq.com. And now it's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I had to
And
burn.
Now it's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
Okay, take two. All right,
that
this one
was a sassy one for you.
Yeah, I love it. This one goes to Mr. Rogers. Of course, he always gets a Yaz Queen, but today he gets one because there's this quote that has been discovered. Someone went deep into the archives of Mr. Rogers.
Because clearly they have way too much time on their hands.
I mean, there was always questions around his sexuality.
Because he wore cardigans.
I mean,
they thought he was gay because
he
was
sensitive and cared about people.
Yeah.
I don't know. And in his biopic, or not
which
biopic,
was snubbed during
his
the,
documentary, not
Oscars.
Biopic. His documentary, they actually ask him, or they include footage of people asking him, and he goes, "No, I'm not." Whatever. They do talk about that. Anyway, people are very excited because it seems like, according to a biography of Rogers, which came out last year, the children's TV presenter told his openly gay friend, Dr. William Hirsch, that if sexuality was a spectrum, this is the quote, "Well, you know, I must be smack in the middle because I have found women attractive and I found men attractive."
Yes, we love an icon that was ahead of his time thinking of sexuality as a spectrum.
And this is a revelation that Mr. Rogers was bisexual. It delights all his fans. And once again, this is surprising because if you watch the documentary, one of the people in the show is a person of color who came out as gay. And he said, he's even asked, I think that's actually it. He was asked, is there any inkling that he could have been gay? And he goes, no, he was not. So interesting. Mm. So he died, Mr. Rogers. Fred Rogers died in 2003, 2 years after his show ended, after more than 3 decades on the air. Some referenced his routine end of show message to the audience when he said, "There's no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are." And these are people that were just excited to hear this bisexual news. One tweeter wrote, "Much like Mr. Rogers, you just warmed my entire life with a couple of words."
Oh, I love that. And also someone else said, "Knowing a trusted childhood voice for me was someone like me, I'm literally choking up." That's beautiful.
Yes. So who knows? It seems like it was true. He said that. It came from his mouth, but it was something that people have been
Which
talking about for
because
years.
Because he couldn't ever feel like he could, you know, be openly, you know, himself. And at that time and at that period, especially, Mr. Rogers, that was a kid's show as well. Did he have like kids coming in and out?
Yeah.
And at that time, I also feel like a lot of like homosexuality was also unfortunately very like kind of aligned with pedophilia in some ways. And it's very weird. I'm happy that we low-key kind of found out the truth, and it's beautiful for him, and I wish he was able to be here in this time to see everything that we've accomplished. I mean, to see that there's a Channel Q. That's
exactly.
Like a gay radio station. Like, that's powerful.
So, Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, you get our Yaz Queen of the day.
Yes,
I would
queen.
Say today and every day, really.
Every single day, Mr. Rogers.
We are back tomorrow, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. That is 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on Channel Q. We're talking about Taylor Swift. I know you hate her, Ryan.
I mean, I kind of like her now that she's, you know, not a Republican and she's a Democrat and she's still losery to me in some way. And I also think she's like Regina George, but I'll talk about that maybe tomorrow.
Well, we are talking about, she talks about actually in this interview what she's learned about love. And so
that's going to be funny.
She's inspiring us. What is one thing about love that you would tell your younger self? Plus, have you been wondering what Michael Jackson's kids think about the controversial documentary? His daughter, Paris Jackson, is finally speaking out, and we are going there.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up tomorrow. Again, let's go there with Sheeran Ryan on Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye, guys.